Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going back into a really fascinating account looking at aircraft maintenance during the Vietnam War.
That's right. Our source is an interview with retired Air Force Major William John Mackey, specifically from episode 55 of the Military Tales series on YouTube.
Exactly. And we're pulling directly from that video transcript, focusing on his experiences from episode 55 to understand, you know, the reality of keeping those planes flying in such a unique place.
It's a side of the conflict you don't always hear about, the maintenance side. So our mission here is to really dig into Major Mackey's story from that specific episode, look at the daily grind, the ingenuity needed, all from a maintainer's point of view.
Okay, let's jump in. So after ROTC, Major Mackey, he gets sent to Chanute Air Force Base for maintenance officer training, right? Late 60s.
That's the starting point he describes in episode 55. That Chanute training was, well, absolutely foundational, given the basics he'd desperately need later on.
And that groundwork was crucial, I imagine.
Oh, definitely. Especially for what came next in Southeast Asia.
Which was Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma, as he mentions in the interview. Sounds like he got thrown into some pretty big projects there.
Yeah, straight into it. Tinkers was busy. He talks in episode 55 about working on re-engined planes and also these B-52 tail structure problems, cracking issues.
B-52 tail cracking, that sounds serious.
It really was. Shows you the kind of stress those bombers were under, operationally speaking. Heavy use.
Then things took a sharp turn. Unexpected orders, he says, to NKP in Thailand.
Right, neck on Phenom. And at the time, as he points out in episode 55, it was top secret. Imagine getting orders like that, just an APO number, basically.
Yeah, no idea where you're really heading. Highlights the secrecy around some of these operations.
Absolutely. NKP was vital, but definitely under wraps initially.
In his first impressions when he got there, he paints quite a picture in the interview. Not your typical airbase.
No, not at all. What he describes in episode 55 is this mix of all sorts of different aircraft parked out on this perforated steel plating. PSP, they called it.
PSP, right. For forward bases.
Exactly. Keeps the dust down, gives a stable surface. But seeing that weird mix of planes, there must have been a real sign that things were different at NKP.
And his first job, assigned to the C-123 Campbellstick operation, sounds specific.
Very. These C-123s, as he explains it, were dropping flares at night over the Ho Chi Minh Trail, trying to light things up, disrupt enemy movement.
Night missions, flare drops.
Yeah.
Aircraft reliability would be paramount.
Absolutely critical. And that leads right into something he discovered almost immediately, a major issue in the hydraulic shop.
Ah, yes. The reverse safety wiring. He talks about this in detail in episode 55 on repaired brakes, no less.
Yeah. I mean, talk about dangerous. Reverse safety wire does the exact opposite of what it's supposed to do. It could literally cause the brakes to fail.
So finding that right off the bat,
it just threw him into the deep end, immediately responsible for quality control. His quick action there, as he describes, really set the tone, probably led to a whole review of procedures, I guess. You know, that constant battle between getting things done fast and getting them done right.
He also mentions the Klong. Is that the nickname for the C-130 transport?
That's the one. The workhorse C-130 moving people and supplies between bases. Calling it the Klong, like the canals in Thailand. It kind of humanizes this vital piece of logistics, doesn't it? He touches on that in the interview.
In NKP itself, it sounds like it had a certain reputation. He mentions needing security police escorts for personnel assignments.
Yeah, that detail he drops in episode 55 definitely hints that NKP wasn't your average assignment. Maybe the secrecy, maybe the types of missions. It suggests, well, a tense atmosphere, heightened security at least.
And the sheer variety of aircraft there. He lists them in the interview. A-1 Sky Raiders, those C-123s, the QU-22B Piper Cubs for Project Alpha.
HH-3 and HH-53 rescue helicopters, even old A-26 Invaders.
It's like an aviation museum, but they all had to fly. Must have been a massive maintenance challenge.
Oh, absolutely. As he lays out in episode 55, each type had its own needs, its own parts, its own quirks. Keeping that whole diverse fleet operational at a forward base like NKP, a huge undertaking.
Let's talk about Project Alpha. He describes dropping these disguised listening devices.
Yeah, sensors disguised as, you know, jungle debris or whatever, dropped along the trail.
And then using those QU-22Bs, basically modified Piper Cubs, to fly high overhead and collect the data.
Exactly. Those QU-22Bs would loiter, listening for signals from the sensors, which picked up enemy movement. That data went back, got analyzed, and then fed back to guide bombing missions. Pretty sophisticated intelligence gathering for the time.
It really sounds like something from a different era of spycraft.
It really was. integrating that tech into the battlefield.
He also gives a real sense of the conditions, the extreme heat. Tells that story about trying to fry an egg on an aircraft wing.
Huh. Yeah, that anecdote he shares, it just hits home, doesn't it? The brutal heat everyone and the equipment had to deal with. Imagine trying to work on hot metal all day. Wow.
Then there's the Yankee extraction system on the A-1s. A rocket-propelled ejection seat, essentially.
Pretty much. The A-1 wasn't designed with ejection seats, so this was a retrofit. A rocket basically pulls the pilot out.
Sounds incredibly dangerous itself.
It was definitely risky, as Major Mucky points out, but potentially life-saving if the plane went down. His job included inspecting and clearing these systems, he says in the interview. High responsibility.
And he mentions later trying to find documentation on it was tough, suggesting how specialized it was.
Yeah, speaks to the sort of ad hoc, almost experimental nature of some solutions back then, something he reflects on in episode 55.
The scope also extended beyond Vietnam, didn't it?
Yeah.
He talks about the Lima sites in Laos, clandestine supply runs.
Right, supplying the Royal Laotian Army. It shows the broader context, the interconnectedness of the conflict. These flights into Laos, dropping ammo, grenades, rations.
And using code words for safe landing. Underscores the danger.
Absolutely. Covert ops, high risk. It was all part of that wider logistical network he was involved in supporting.
Now, a really sobering part he recounts in episode 55 is dealing with aircraft transferred from the Ranch Hand program. The C-123 is used for spraying Agent Orange.
Yeah, this is a critical point. They discovered dried Agent Orange residue inside these planes. Significant amounts.
Yeah, it was causing corrosion.
Serious corrosion issues, making maintenance even harder. But more than that, think about the health risks for the crews working on these contaminated aircraft.
And he mentions a sort of don't ask, don't tell attitude about it back then.
Sadly, yes. It reflects a real lack of understanding or perhaps acknowledgement of the long-term dangers of Agent Orange exposure at the time. A major ethical issue, really, protecting your people.
The workload sounds relentless, too. He describes the dry season, search and rescue missions.
Yeah.
People sleeping on the flight line.
Yeah, that image he paints, crews crashing right there by the aircraft, it just screams exhaustion and dedication, especially during SAR missions when every second counted, nonstop operations.
Interestingly, he also mentions a strict separation between maintenance and operations crews. Limited direct contact with pilots.
That seems counterintuitive, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Probably driven by security, the need-to-know principle, especially with secret missions flying out of NKP.
But you wonder if it slowed things down, like troubleshooting without direct pilot feedback.
It potentially could have, yeah. A definite challenge for the maintenance teams trying to diagnose issues.
But they were definitely dealing with the results of combat. Patching bullet holes on helos and A-1s was just routine, he says.
Just another day at the office, patching up battle damage, highlights how often these aircraft were flying into harm's way. Quick repairs were essential.
He even throws in a little detail about Army helicopter repairs, seeing yellow primer around door gunner spots.
Right, because there wasn't time for a full paint job. That yellow zinc chromate primer, it's like a visual clue, tells you where the damage usually happened and how urgently they needed that bird back in the air.
Then his career takes this massive shift.
Yeah.
From Vietnam aircraft maintenance to Titan II ICBMs.
Quite the change, yeah. From the sort of hands-on, often improvised work in Thailand to the superstructured, high-stakes world of nuclear missiles back in the States. Different technical challenges altogether.
He was a crew commander, missile trainer.
Right, at places like Wichita Falls, Vandenberg, McConnell, a completely different focus.
And he even tried to make the missile training more real, putting actual circuit breaker panels in the simulators.
I love that detail. Shows his commitment to making training effective, giving crews that hands-on feel, even in simulation. Very practical thinking.
Then the strategic picture shifts again. SAC, Strategic Air Command, which had been all about nukes, starts using B-52s for conventional bombing in Vietnam. The Arclight missions.
Yeah, a big pivot. Using the B-52s for heavy conventional bombing runs, he mentions how effective they were. The Arclight strikes were devastating, a major change from their deterrent role.
And this leads him to become an avionics officer for B-52s and KC-135 tankers, dealing with complex electronics.
Especially the ECM electronic countermeasures. That stuff is incredibly sophisticated. Basically, systems designed to jam or fool enemy radar and missiles.
Like electronic camouflage for a huge bomber.
Exactly. Making that giant plane much harder to track and target. Maintaining those complex ECM suites was absolutely vital for B-52 survivability, high-tech work.
He also had a stint as an interim squadron commander, then off to Europe during the Cold War. F4Gs, the Wild Weasels.
Talk about high tempo. Chief maintenance officer for a wild weasel squadron in Cold War Europe, plus nuclear weapons clearance. That's the sharp end.
And the wild weasel mission itself. F4Gs hunting enemy radar sites.
Yeah, working in pairs. One acts as bait, gets the radar to light up. The other launches an anti-radiation missile to take it out. Hunter-killer teams. Very dangerous work.
He mentions training deployments, too. Spain, Egypt.
Shows the global nature of operations, needing to work with allies, adapt to different places.
Then back to the States, Homestead in Florida, transitioning from the old F-4 Phantoms to F-16s.
And running into parts supply issues again. Seems like logistics is a constant battle, doesn't matter the plane or the era, getting the right parts to the right place at the right time.
He also discusses the Have-Quick system, that's the frequency hawking radio, right?
Correct. A big step up in secure communications makes it much harder for the enemy to listen in, or jam comms. But she notes there were teething problems getting it implemented initially. New tech always has wrinkles.
And even after he retires in 87, he gets recalled after 9/11.
Yeah, brought back specifically for his expertise in chemical warfare preparedness, drawing on that European Cold War experience, shows how valuable that experience remained.
He even gave his assessment back then on the likelihood of chemical weapons being used.
A cautious assessment, as you'd expect from someone trained in it, acknowledging the threat, the unpredictability.
Throughout all this, though, that theme of attention to detail really stands out, going right back to that reverse safety wire incident he described in episode 55.
Absolutely. That first story sets the stage. Meticulousness is everything in aircraft maintenance. Small mistakes have huge consequences.
And the story of Arnold the Pig, that F4 that kept having problems.
Yes, a classic maintenance nightmare. An intermittent fault, the hardest kind to find.
But they finally tracked it down. Methodical troubleshooting found a chafed cable causing all the issues.
Exactly. It's detective work, really. Persistence, systematic checking. It highlights the skill involved. You can't just guess.
He talked about the satisfaction in finally fixing something complex like that, like a skilled mechanic who just has a feel for the machine.
The knack, as he puts it, an intuition developed over years, sensing when an aircraft is, quote, sick. It's a real skill.
And he strongly recommends military service, highlights the continuous learning, and also the contributions of women he saw entering more fields.
Yeah, he emphasizes the learning opportunities and his comments on women in maintenance, cockpits, missile crews. It reflects the changes he saw and valued. Different perspectives, different skills, all valuable.
He notes physical differences matter for some tasks, but emphasizes the value women brought across the board.
A balanced view, acknowledging practicalities, but stressing the overall positive impact.
And his final thoughts turn to the future. AI in the military. Mm-hmm. Autonomous refueling drones, for instance.
But with a big caveat, right? The absolute need for robust safeguards against hacking, that's crucial.
It's a very forward-looking point.
Definitely. He's seen technology evolve massively, so he understands both the potential and the risks of what's coming next.
So, wrapping up our deep dive on Major Maki's account from episode 55, we've really seen the intense reality of aircraft maintenance in Vietnam, the sheer diversity of planes, the ingenuity needed.
And the dedication. Sleeping on the flight line, patching bullet holes, plus those surprising insights like the Yankee system or that shocking Agent Orange contamination issue he described.
It gives you, the listener, hopefully, a much clearer picture of that side of the war seen through his eyes in that specific interview, and also how military tech kept changing throughout his career.
Which leaves us with a final thought, really. Thinking about the demanding, high-risk environment Major Maki operated in, as described in episode 55, and looking at today's push towards AI and autonomy in the military, how do we maintain that crucial balance, the balance between leveraging amazing new technology and retaining the irreplaceable value of human judgment, critical thinking, and that knack Major Maki talked about? That's something to really ponder as warfare continues to evolve.